Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, February 4th, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis. Bill in the Idaho legislature would create a system where the legislators, rather than hiring committees, choose presidents of universities in Idaho. Democrat casts tie-breaking vote in Idaho Senate Education Committee to advance bill expanding taxpayer money for private schools. The Donnelly Library, authors and book publishers are suing the state of Idaho over the one-year-old library law. And Coast plans new bus service connecting Moscow, Pullman, Colfax, and Albion starting in July. And we have more info on the U.S. Forest Service website blackout. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Lewiston police report one person is dead and another injured in a shooting this morning in the Lewiston Orchards neighborhood. Police arrived in the 400 block of Park Avenue around 10 a.m. after someone reported shots fired. The Lewiston Tribune website reports officers found a 36-year-old woman dead and a 38-year-old man with life-threatening injuries. Crews took the injured man to a hospital. A Lewiston police news release says early indications are the shooting was an isolated incident and there's no current threat to the public, but police are still investigating. The National Weather Service office in Spokane has issued a winter storm warning for the Washington and Idaho Palouse for tonight and into tomorrow morning, as well as other areas to the north. The agency forecasts up to 9 inches of snow is possible on the Palouse through tomorrow morning and between 3 and 6 inches in the Spokane and Coeur d'Alene area. The Weather Service is also predicting drifting snow throughout the region. Spokane-based meteorologist Greg Koch told the Spokesman Review website, for the entire region, most of this accumulation will occur before the morning commute. Republican Representative Jordan Redman of Coeur d'Alene introduced a bill today to repeal Medicaid expansion if a long list of requirements are not met by July 1st, 2026. Although Redman told the House Health and Welfare Committee his bill is a safeguard approach which will strengthen Idaho's Medicaid program while maintaining flexibility, some are concerned the bill's rules will be impossible to meet. Redman introduced essentially the same bill last year, and it failed to get traction for the same reason. Redman's bill would require enrollment in expanded Medicaid be capped at 50,000, which would mean the remaining 40,000 recipients currently on expanded Medicaid would lose their coverage. His bill also adds work requirements and a 36-month lifetime limit for Medicaid benefits and includes presumptive Medicaid coverage in hospitals for pregnant women and children. 61% of Idaho voters passed Medicaid expansion in 2018 after years of lobbying the state legislature with no action. During an introduction hearing in the Health and Welfare Committee today, Republican Representative Lori McCann of Lewiston and Democratic Representative Elena Rubel of Boise questioned Representative Redman about certain aspects of his bill.
Where it talked about the 3-year lifetime limit with able-bodied adults, I get that. And so if I'm able-bodied, but then something should occur, then that pulls me out of that category, I'm assuming. But I just wanted to clarify that lifetime limit and what is qualifying. I guess I just would like more information. So if someone determines I'm an able-bodied adult, but that I may say to, I don't maybe believe that I can do what they believe I can do. So those determinations, I want to make sure that we're very defined and that we, many have been here before, but I'm just concerned about limiting if who makes that determination and to be sure, because that's a pretty stiff penalty of saying you never can get it if you've already had this for 3 years. So I just want to be sure that I'm comfortable with putting that limit on our folks.
Representative Redmond.
Mr. Chairman and Representative McCann. So I guess you're determining if they're able-bodied and if they're not. A lot of that process is done directly through the Department of Health and Welfare, where they determine eligibility. Maybe we can talk about it a little bit more. I don't totally understand exactly what we're going through, but you know, I'd be happy to answer that at a full hearing.
Representative Rubel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and for question of the sponsor.
Questions in order.
I guess I'm going to focus on the fiscal note because I have some concerns about this. I think this will, for all practical purposes, mean Medicaid expansion repeal because some of these waivers we've asked for in the past, and they're not possible to grant in compliance with the Affordable Care Act, which requires that there can be no additional cost beyond Medicaid. And so I guess I'm going to reiterate some of the concerns I had on the fiscal note when the earlier one for direct repeal came up. I don't see any provisions in here for all of the costs associated with this. For example, work requirements, there would have to be standing up a whole elaborate training program, a compliance program, and, you know, CAT fund, indigent fund, all of the lost tax revenue that comes from essentially losing $1 billion of federal funding coming into the state. All of the savings throughout the system and behavioral health and the prison system. So I'm just wondering, should I not be concerned about all of those countervailing costs? Because my back of the envelope is that it would cost us about $140 million, and this only references savings. So I guess, could you address that fiscal note concern?
Representative Redmond.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Rubel. Yes. So dealing with the fiscal note, again, the goal is that we would hit these safeguards and it saves the state more money to keep Medicaid expansion. And that was the kind of the thought behind it. As far as the waivers go, I've actually spoke to several folks at the new federal administration. They said they're looking for waivers that are unique and creative that they want to grant. And I believe that this year we're going to have that opportunity to get these waivers granted because I think you're seeing a lot of change currently in the federal administration. And I think that there's a high likelihood that these waivers would be granted.
That was Republican Representative Jordan Redmond of Coeur d'Alene answering questions from Republican Representative Lori McCann of Lewiston and Democratic Representative Elena Rubel of Boise. Book publishers have joined the Donnelly Library District. A librarian from Meridian, authors, and students in a lawsuit against the Idaho legislature over the 2024 law that allows people to challenge library books deemed harmful to minors and sue the library if books are not moved to an area of the library out of reach of minors within 60 days. House Bill 710 became law on July 1st last year, and it made it illegal for schools and public libraries to make books deemed harmful available to minors. Laws which previously existed defined harmful material to include any depiction or description of intimate sexual acts, masturbation, nudity, or sexual conduct that includes homosexuality. The amended law requires libraries have a complaint form that allows a member of the public to request the review of books or other materials they believe may be harmful. If items deemed harmful are not removed or relocated to an adults-only area, people can then sue the school or library. Penguin Random House, Hachette, Macmillan, HarperCollins, Simon & Schuster, and other Idaho plaintiffs filed the suit today in U.S. District Court. The five book publishers control close to 80% of the book market in the United States. Other plaintiffs are the Donnelly Public Library District, Rocky Mountain High School librarian Christy Nichols, authors Melinda Lowe, Dashka Later, and David Levithan, an Eagle woman, and two Idaho high school students and their parents. The lawsuit argues House Bill 710 is vague, confusing, and violates the First Amendment right to free speech and promotes discrimination about sexual orientation and gender identity. The lawsuit complains House Bill 710 puts educators and librarians in the position of having to guess whether any member of the public might file an objection to a book whose message they disagree with, especially because the distinction of a harmful book is subjective. The defendants in the case are the Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador, Ada County Prosecutor Jan Benance, Nez Perce County Prosecutor Justin Coleman, Valley County Prosecutor Brian Nagel, and the City of Eagle, the Eagle Public Library Board of Trustees, and an anonymous person who requested the removal of 23 books from Eagle's Public Library. In a news conference today, Penguin Books Vice President and Associate General Counsel Dan Novak said publishers, authors, and libraries have the right to share viewpoints in the marketplace of ideas, and these students have the right to learn. Banning a book is a resort of a government that has lost confidence in the power of its own message. Not only are book bans wrong, they are counterproductive. Novak said governments can publish their own thoughts and let the best ideas win. During the news conference, Donnelly Public Library Director Sherry Sheline said, "The law caused a crisis in our community. The materials in our collection are displayed on shelves arranged in the library's single-room open floor plan that, due to its small footprint, are viewable and accessible to all who enter the building." 250 people live in the small community of Donnelly, which is south of McCall. Sheline said their one-room library with an open floor plan has effectively become an adults-only library. High school students and their parents complained the law has violated their First Amendment rights. They say the law is more vague in its definitions of harmful matter than the Supreme Court decided in 1973. The Idaho lawsuit said the vague definition of harmful materials has created a chilling effect and removal of materials that should be protected. The book publishers and authors in the lawsuit said the Idaho law's apparent emphasis on LGBTQ content is especially troublesome. The lawsuit calls House Bill 710's explicit inclusion of homosexuality as harmful material discriminatory and says it violates the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. In the news conference, Melinda Lowe, author of young adult novels that center on LGBTQ characters, said, "When my book started to be banned, it felt to me like a direct attempt to suppress my freedom of speech. House Bill 710 in Idaho is clearly trying to stigmatize queer identities and queer sexuality. I want to make it clear to everyone, but to my readers especially, that there is nothing shameful about queer sexuality. There is nothing shameful about being queer, period." And you're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Idaho lawmakers are looking to expand options for students to go to schools other than public ones, but that could impact funds for rural schools. In his State of the State speech, Governor Brad Little proposed adding $150 million to the budget for schools. That includes $50 million for so-called school choice programs, which fund students going to private schools. However, Superintendent of the Fruitland School District Stoney Winston says this will hurt rural school districts like his, which are already underfunded and could mean finding funds in other ways like local voter-approved taxes.
Rural districts are not only sending their money in public tax dollars to support private education, but now they're having to pony up some money in order to meet some basic needs for the rural school districts.
State lawmakers are listening to Little's proposal. House Bill 1 is the Idaho Parental Choice Tax Credit, which provides up to $9,500 in tax credits to parents or guardians for the expense of non-public schools. Little says expanding school choice is needed in particular for students with unique physical and developmental conditions. But Winston points out that public special education is underfunded, and also that private schools aren't under the same obligations as public schools.
Private schools don't have to take students with disabilities. Public schools are mandated to do so. And I don't see that as a bad thing. I think that's what we should be doing. And we should be taking those students and making sure that we're giving them the best education possible to fit their needs.
Winston says lawmakers should take a step back and consider what they want education to look like in 20 years, especially in rural Idaho.
Our rural schools are the heart of communities, and I don't want to see that destroyed in the future.
For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
This program is made possible by KRFP members and the Palouse Peace Coalition. Palouse Peace Coalition is a consistent presence for peace since 2001. The Palouse Peace Coalition shares KRFP's progressive values and hosts a weekly peace vigil Fridays from 3 to 4 p.m. in Moscow's Friendship Square.
For information on becoming a KRFP underwriter, go to krfp.org and click Support KRFP.
Oh, hey, I didn't see you there. You know, if you're like most Americans, you probably say to yourself all the time, systemic racism, is that really a thing? Well, did you know that back in the 1980s, there were less than 500,000 people in the U.S. prison system, but now, thanks to the war on drugs, there are more than 2 million? Did you know that out of every 100,000 Americans, about 700 are incarcerated, but out of every 100,000 black men, over 4,000 are incarcerated? And that one of the many effects of that trend is, combined with felony disenfranchisement laws, it means that 13% of black American men are denied the right to vote? Did you know that? Do you know what that's called? That's called systemic racism. And yes, it's really a thing.
To learn more about systemic racism, visit raceforward.org and donate today to support racial justice.
The Idaho House Education Committee sent a proposal to require Senate confirmation for university president hires from Republican Representative Douglas Pickett back to him for revision. The bill would apply to the state's four-year colleges, the University of Idaho, Boise State University, Idaho State University, and Lewis Clark State College. Republican Representative Jack Nelson of Jerome said the bill would leave a president answering to two bosses, the State Board of Education, which would make the initial hire, and the legislature, who would confirm them. Nelson said, "This isn't going to attract excellent, high-quality people to apply for the job." Democratic Representative Chris Mathias of Boise said the bill would create a dangerous and potentially costly precedent. He said, "I have concerns about cracking open the confirmation process for people who are not appointed by the governor."
A Wyoming bill to expand a school voucher program passed the House last week. This despite a new survey showing most Republican voters in the state oppose the system. House Bill 199 would offer up to $7,000 per student to families for non-public K-12 schooling. Proponents say the increased competition will improve education. But president of the Wyoming Education Association, Kim Amon, says the playing field is uneven because private schools don't have to post lesson plans and their students aren't required to take state tests.
If you're talking about competition, the competition isn't fair because one playing field doesn't have any accountability at all, and the other playing field has so much accountability they can't keep up.
The proposed program is a revamped version of a 2024 education savings account program. The new one offers more money, disqualifies pre-K students, and gets rid of income requirements. A recent poll of nearly 700 Republican voters in Wyoming shows 68% oppose universal school vouchers. There are questions about the bill's legality, as the Wyoming Constitution prohibits the state from giving money to most individuals and prohibits the use of public funds for private or parochial schools. The voucher funds would divert money from public schools. Amon says that's an equity problem.
Our rural communities do not have access to the private schools that our larger communities have, and so when you talk about giving universal vouchers, if you're in Cheyenne, that might work out well for you, but if you're in Metiche, you don't have a lot of options.
Amon calls Wyoming public schools and their employees amazing. Meanwhile, President Donald Trump released an executive order last week prioritizing educational choice. I'm Kathleen Shannon with Wyoming News Service.
Democratic Representative Kerry Semmelroth of Boise cast the deciding vote in the Senate Education Committee yesterday on a bill from Republican Senator Dave Lent of Idaho Falls that would expand Idaho's Empowering Parents program from $30 to $50 million and increase yearly grants under the program from $1,000 to $5,000 and add private school tuition as an eligible expense. The bill also would add an additional $30 million in special education funding, partly to address a funding gap estimated at $80 million for special ed. Senator Semmelroth of Boise said she voted for the bill because This is the first time I've seen legislation that's actually trying to put money into special ed, separate from partisan politics, separate from vouchers. As a special education teacher, I have to take efforts like this seriously. She broke with the Democratic caucus in the Idaho legislature, which is strongly opposed to subsidies for private education and religious schools, which is the goal of another bill on the House side earlier this year.
Don't touch that dial. You got it right.
We're up in the morning when it first gets light, and we do it all day. Then we're up all night so you can listen to the radio.
You got it right.
Listen to the radio.
You've got it right.
Listen, anytime you listen, everybody's on a mission, and there ain't nothing missing when you listen to the radio.
Listen to the radio.
You've got it right.
Community radio.
Listen, and you give a little listen to the radio.
Radio Free Moscow.
Fight Back Radio.
90.3 on your radio dial.
Fight Back.
Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for your support. So keep on listening and listening and listening.
Fight back.
We're still here.
Radio.
Fight
back. Fight back.
Fight
back.
Fight
back.
Fight back.
Fight back.
We have more details about the U.S. Forest Service webpage shutdowns. The Guardian reports the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Office of Communications issued the directive via email Thursday asking for website managers to, quote, identify and archive or unpublish any landing pages focused on climate change. The Guardian reports on Friday, Agriculture Department officials clarified the content of the web pages should not be deleted. The officials wrote to the public affairs directors, USDA needs to adhere to requirements around records retention, so archive or unpublish landing pages focused on climate change. The Guardian listed several Forest Service web pages were no longer operating, including the Forest Service's Climate Change Resource Center, the Climate Action Tracker, and the National Roadmap for Responding to Climate Change. The USDA climate hubs that connect producers with local climate programs and researchers was still live on the internet as of Friday. The pages that were down had tools and information to mitigate the impact of the climate crisis and access to dozens of programs helping farmers and firefighters. The Trump administration has also frozen hiring and paused projects across dozens of agencies, not just the USDA, and issued employee buyouts guaranteeing federal workers pay and benefits through September if they resign within the next week. The Moscow City Council last night received positive news that Coast Transit would be expanding into Moscow, and an insurance problem that had caused Smart Transit to suspend service for 3 days had been cleared up. Council on Aging and Human Services Director Paige Collins told the City Council last night their Colfax-based Coast Transit program has been lining up financing to offer a new free fixed-schedule bus service to Moscow, Pullman, Albion, and Colfax starting in July. Here's Paige Collins.
Moscow is the only place for people to receive dialysis in our area, and there is a huge need for dialysis. And so we have a limited number of dialysis clients we can take because although we don't prioritize one ride over the other, dialysis is a life-sustaining treatment, and so we take that very seriously. And when we accept a dialysis client, we want to make sure that they're getting to dialysis and that they don't have to worry about that. So we're only able to accept so many. So this shuttle system will also open that up for people to be able to receive that without having to worry about scheduling or whether they're going to have a ride, because it will be regular and accessible to them as long as they don't need that ADA accessibility.
Coast has submitted an application to Washington State Department of Transportation for a free shuttle service that would run Colfax, Albion, Pullman, and Moscow 6 days a week from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. The Palouse Regional Transportation Planning Organization, it's a very big rated this project for WashDOT at an A project. So that basically means it should be funded. Of course, I'm not counting my chickens until I see a contract, but it does appear that it's going to be funded. That would start July 1st, which is very exciting. We're doing a lot of work right now getting ready for this. The contracts with WashDOT provide 95% of the cost of the operations for this shuttle and 80% of the capital we need to buy two new buses. So in essence, we needed to find $46,000 for operations, and we need to find $59,000 for the two buses. Big buses, the 14-passenger buses, are very expensive right now. We are down to needing only $13,000 and change at this moment. So I come here hoping we might convince you to make even the smallest donation towards this.
Colin said the bus service is designed to serve people who need transportation to and from medical appointments.
Moscow is the only place for people to receive dialysis in our area, and there is a huge need for dialysis. And so we have a limited number of dialysis clients we can take, because although we don't prioritize one ride over the other, dialysis is a life-sustaining treatment, and so we take that very seriously. And when we accept a dialysis client, we want to make sure that they're getting to dialysis and that they don't have to worry about that. So we're only able to accept so many. So this shuttle system will also open that up for people to be able to receive that without having to worry about scheduling or whether they're going to have a ride, because it will be regular and accessible to them as long as they don't need that ADA accessibility.
That was Council on Aging and Human Services Director Paige Collins. Mayor Art Bedke told Collins, Coast should put together a financing spreadsheet which could help the city council make a decision on offering funding for some of the remaining $13,000 needed to start the project. Councilmember Haley Lewis asked about whether there would be recurring costs beyond the first year of the project that the city would be obliged to pay for. Collins replied after the second year, they could roll funding into Coast Transit's regular operations. In other public transportation news, Moscow free bus service Smart Transit did not run Friday, Saturday, or yesterday because of an issue with their insurance carrier. Moscow Councilmember Bryce Blankenship asked fellow Councilmember Haley Lewis when the issue might be resolved.
Is service resuming soon?
Yes.
Can we just make that statement definitive for people listening?
Yes, let me pull up the press release was getting ready to...
It went out.
I'm looking...
Tomorrow morning.
Yeah, okay. Tomorrow morning. Great.
Resuming normal operations. There's a lot of back and forth. But yes, as of 4:48, we are back to normal operations. So that meant no scheduled service on Friday, Saturday, or today. But it meant everyone came in as scheduled. We had things for everyone to work on.
Smart Transit buses will resume service starting today.
Montana lawmakers are considering three bills on gender. They're all versions of previous bills that either failed or were struck down in court. But some new drafts have higher stakes. Two bills would determine if or how transgender people can use certain bathrooms and changing rooms and participate in school sports. A third seeks to prohibit access to gender-affirming health care and to criminalize doctors and parents who, according to the bill, knowingly procure or provide such care. Surya Moreno is the state legislative director for the advocacy group Forward Montana and says some lawmakers have described transgender people as out of compliance.
It's an overreach of our government to try to force people across our communities to comply with what they think is correct gender presentation.
Proponents say the bills would prevent harassment and protect the welfare of children. Moreno says the proposition that lawmakers should have a say in families' private medical decisions, or that they understand athletes' needs more than teachers and coaches, is a dangerous one. These bills parallel a January federal order from President Donald Trump that defines sex and directs federal agencies to rescind materials that discuss gender ideology. Moreno says organizers across Montana have been preparing for the state bills.
The governor in his state of the state did direct the legislature to get these types of bills to his desk. But I think it's important for everyone to remember that our legislature doesn't work for the governor. They work for their constituents.
Legislators have referred all three bills to committee after hearings last week. Moreno says regardless of the fate of these bills, debates on them are harmful. 90% of LGBTQ plus young people say their well-being has been negatively impacted by recent politics, according to a 2024 survey from the Trevor Project. I'm Kathleen Shannon with Big Sky Connection.
Women in rural areas struggle more with menopause than their urban counterparts, according to a study from the University of Washington. Rural women reported more symptoms like joint pain and mood swings in one of the first studies to look at menopausal rural-urban discrepancies. Author and program director of the University of Washington Women's Reproductive Health Research Center, Dr. Susan Reed, says she's not surprised by these results. She says the study is a signal that medical providers need to do better for the rural population.
If people transition through this period in a healthy fashion, they live longer. They have fewer cardiovascular problems and perhaps better brain aging.
Reed notes that other studies have shown women in rural areas are struggling with higher mortality rates and other health issues like higher suicide rates and obesity. Reed says there's decreased access in rural places because of the long distances people often have to travel to receive care.
People providing menopause health care in rural areas, many of them are really passionate and do a good job. There just aren't enough of them.
Reed says there are other factors that contribute to poor menopausal care, not just for women in rural areas, but urban and suburban areas too. She says hormonal therapy is a safe and effective treatment and that there should be a higher prevalence of its use.
The challenges there are due to misinformation on the internet, fear of patients, and then providers not being skilled enough to help people understand risks and benefits of menopausal hormone therapy.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, there is a winter storm warning in effect for the Washington and Idaho Palouse until 10 a.m. tomorrow. Heavy snow and localized drifting snow, snow accumulations 4 to 9 inches Tuesday night into Wednesday morning. Some accumulations Tuesday night into Wednesday morning will create challenging travel for the Tuesday evening and Wednesday morning commutes. Wind gusts up to 30 miles per hour for Pullman and Moscow down to Uniontown. Localized drifting snow for Pullman and Moscow south to Uniontown will limit visibility at times. If you must travel, keep an extra flashlight, food, and water in your vehicle in case of an emergency. Forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area is calling for 100% chance of snow tonight. Total nighttime snow accumulation 3 to 5 inches. Low 19, west winds 5 to 10, gusts up to 25. 60% chance of snow tomorrow, mainly before 10 a.m. Mostly cloudy, high 30. West winds 10, becoming south in the afternoon with gusts up to 20. New snow accumulation less than 1 inch possible. 40% chance of snow Wednesday night, mostly cloudy, low 19. New snow accumulation less than half an inch possible. And on Thursday, 40% chance of snow, partly sunny, high 31, little or no snow accumulation expected. Current temperature is 28. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year. You can send your memberships to 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. There's also ways to contribute to KRFP on the KRFP.org website. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. There you can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. There's also a PayPal option and a Patreon button, and you can adopt a DJ. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Brenda Cox assisted with tonight's newscast. Coming up, we have Flashpoints in the... That'll go till 7:30, and we have a bit of a schedule change and under construction... show, which was on Thursday nights at 8, is now on Tuesday nights at 7:30, and Rude Awakening, which was on Tuesday nights at 7:30, has moved to Thursday nights at 8. So stay tuned for all that. KRFP Moscow, Pullman.